Hey folks, this is Philip with the Everyday Fighter Podcast, where we share stories and insights from everyday fighters just like you. Today, I'm talking with Kevin Gleason. Kevin is a boxing coach and trainer out of Florida. This was a special episode for me in that this was the first time someone actually reached out to me and said, I'd love to be on your podcast. I found Kevin through Instagram. Follow a lot of people on there. One of the things I love following is people that do pad work, like for MMA and boxing, that type of thing. And he's one of those guys that popped up. It's like, oh, this is pretty cool. So we kind of found each other through there, became aware of each other. And little did I know that he was actually listening to my podcast as well. And one day he said, hey, you know, I'd love to be on there. And I was like, really? So it was a good it was a kind of a good hallmark for me in somebody actually reaching out, which was very cool. Also, in terms of our conversation, he dropped a huge bomb on me that I was not expecting. And that's actually, I think, probably the second time that's happened to me in the life of this this podcast so far. The first one being with Jennifer Harshman. I think it was episode 12 or something. But in any case, I'm looking forward to sharing Kevin with you and his experiences in his challenge, and looking forward to getting your feedback on that. But before we do that, I want to get into our episode spotlight. As a reminder, these spotlights are not sponsored. These folks have no idea that I'm doing this. Most of the time, they have no idea who I am, but these are people or organizations that are doing good in the world, and I just want to share a bit of what they're doing and put a spotlight on them, give them some more attention. So today, I wanted to talk with you about Steve Hartman. Steve is a correspondent on the CBS Evening News. His segment is called On the Road, and he looks for organizations or individuals that are doing good work in their local communities and, you know, puts a heartwarming spin on them. And it's not even a spin. I mean, he just comes from the heart. And it's something that I always find to be uplifting. If I'm having a down day, I'm just like, hey, let me see what's on with Steve Hartman and On the Road. And it just really brings a bright spot to my day. So I encourage you to seek him out. You can find him on Facebook, also on CBS On the Road. And that is our spotlight. With that, let me jump into our episode with Kevin Gleason.
So I started boxing when I was about 13 years old. I had two older brothers. I was always intrigued by, you know, by boxing. At that time, as a kid, you kind of want to be the toughest guy around, you know. So I started boxing locally here in Broward County, Florida, Pembroke Pines Pal. And, you know, I just, like I said, I always was intrigued with being, it wasn't so much just boxing. I just wanted to be the toughest kid out there, you know, as childish as that sounds. And then, you know, I boxed through, you know, on and off through high school, you know, trading off for other sports. You know, I played baseball, hockey, I wrestled in high school as well. And then from there, you know, I took a lot of time off, and I'd say by the time I was about 23, 24, I started doing it again, just to train, nothing for, you know, competing wise. And I started training, and I linked up with a coach that I knew over the years, and he had just opened up his own gym. And I started, you know, he would pay me to hold mitts for him. And I knew a little bit of experience from coaching, you know, like doing classes with training partners, you know, holding mitts and stuff like that. And he was paying me like $20 to hold mitts for about, I don't know, half an hour, an hour, something like that. And from there, it kind of grew into its own, like, you know, at first it kind of started off as like, yeah, you know, I'll make a little bit of money. Then it was kind of fun. And then, you know, it got a little bit serious from fighters that knew me when I used to compete, or just guys that wanted to work with me. And then it just kind of grew legs of its own and took off, you know. From there, I started off, I started coaching at a couple of different gyms locally, you know, just, you know, 2-3 hours, because I have a full-time job. I have a 9-to-5. So I started coaching, you know, just to make some side money, about 2 hours a day. And I just started building up my clientele. I started coaching, you know, my private clients at this, this tennis ball court right by my house. Then got into a gym, at Fight Fit, started paying them rent to coach my guys over there. And everything just kind of kept growing and growing. Opened up my own little spot in March. It was a 750 square foot spot. Like I said, we had 4 bags. It was like a private little studio, you know, and I have a pretty good fight team. I coach on an average about maybe 10 fighters. So, you know, it was a little spot. From there, we moved into, in August, we moved into a 1600 square foot spot. And that's where we're at right now with it. So it's going great, man. It's going really good. You know,
that's awesome. Dude, I want to go back a little bit. How did you find yourself? You said you started at 13, boxing?
Yeah. Yeah, about 13
years old. Like, how did you find yourself in that place where you hear that a lot, quite frankly? I mean,
yeah. For me, like I said, you know, I grew up with 2 older brothers. I was always competitive. I don't want to say fighting was in my nature. I always felt like I was pretty good at it, you know, as funny as that sounds. You know, I always remember wanting to be, you know, that kid that felt like, you know, I wanted to be tough at that time. You know what I mean? I didn't want to, just like any kid in middle school, I was in the 7th grade, I think it was, didn't want to get bullied or anything like that. So I wanted to be able to take care of myself and hold my own, you know? So it was one of those. I just wound up in the gym. I told my dad, I'm like, hey, I really want to start boxing. I came home from school one day and he's like, hey, we're going to go over to the Pines Pal. He looked around for gyms and stuff like that. And we went over to the Pines Pal and it just kind of started from there. You know, and the thing was, I was never serious with it as a kid. Like, people asked me that. Like, I had, you know, some amateur fights and stuff like that and some local, like, you know, smokers and things like that. But I was never very serious with it because I was always trading off with sports and, you know, girlfriends and, you know, friends and just doing my thing. So it wasn't until, like I said, about 24, 25 is when it just took off for another level for me. It became, you know, coaching became something I really loved doing, you know, competing. For me, you know, it was fun, but I hated the nerves behind it. You know, I hated the, like, going out. I just could not get past that. You know, especially as a young age, I never had a coach to be like, hey, this is normal that you're feeling anxious, nervous, scared. I never had that. So, you know, going out there, I just thought I was the only one who was scared all the time when it came to competing. And I hated that feeling, you know. But, you know, as far as coaching goes, I didn't know what this was going to intend to be. You know what I mean? I was always really good at doing mitt work and things like that. And I knew how to box. I knew boxing, could teach it and stuff, but I didn't expect it to be where it's at right now, you know? So sometimes it's like, I'm trying to catch up with the success that I'm having as far as like with fighters and things like that. I'm like, damn, this was totally unexpected. So yeah, it's crazy.
Well, when you asked your dad, okay, let's find some place. Was it like was it as a reaction to something that was going on for you? I mean, was it like, were you bullied or were you like, you felt like your brothers were picking on you and
no,
you felt
I mean,
like, I
mean,
I want to get stronger or was
it? I knew that, you know what it was, I knew that there were kids that were tougher than me for sure. You know what I mean? And middle school, I feel like is the hardest years for any kid.
Okay.
You know, I mean, you're kind of trying to find your identity, you know, kids are getting picked on, they're either bullying or, you know, so, I mean, I used to see that and I'm like, I'm not going to be that victim. You know what I mean? I didn't want to be that. So, not that I went to like a tough middle school by any means per se. I mean, it was an average school, public school and stuff like that. I guess that was kind of my mindset and I knew, you know, I knew that for me to be tougher, I'd have to, you know, start boxing and I didn't want to do like karate or anything like that. You know, at the time there was no mixed martial arts, you know what I mean? It was, jiu-jitsu wasn't even that big. I don't even think there was jiu-jitsu. It was like karate or box, you know? So I'm like, man, I got to do something that, you know, if one of these kids try to bully me, I'll be able to take care of myself. You know, I was always pretty athletic and, you know, and able to fight. Like I said, I came up with 2 older brothers and I always remember thinking like, you know, if I got into a fight, I'd be able to take care of myself. But I think, yeah, that fear, I think with any kid is like, man, I'm not going to get bullied. You know what I mean? So I think that, yeah, that probably drove me into the gym, you know, a little bit more For sure. You know, nobody wants to get bullied. So I think, yeah, that probably had something to do with it, I guess, at the time. I'm trying to really remember what it was. I always liked, you know, I grew up with two older brothers, so we were always roughhousing. My dad he bought us boxing gloves at a young age, and we'd box in the living room a little bit and stuff like that. So I just think it was, I don't know, something that just drew me to that sport, you know, and it always did. I mean, I would go and do other things. Like I said, play hockey or baseball or wrestling in high school, but I always went back to boxing. It always kind of, you know, was one thing that I really enjoyed doing. And then when mixed martial arts hit real big, it was, I feel like Florida doesn't have a huge boxing background anymore. There's not a lot of great boxing gyms and stuff. That mixed martial arts is huge out here. So I've been successful in teaching a lot of mixed martial artists boxing, you know, a lot of wrestlers and grapplers and things like that. So that's where a lot of my business comes from, is more mixed martial artists and boxers, you know?
Hmm. So you were exposed to it in any case. It wasn't like you're calling out of the blue, like, oh, let me put on some gloves and let me go into the gym. Know. It was like you were exposed to it, like you said, your father at the end of the stuff first.
Correct. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, for sure. You know, it wasn't like hardcore. My dad by any means didn't really want his kids boxing, you know. Not that he was against it or for it, he wanted us to be happy, but you know, even when I started coaching boxing, he was like, oh, you know, he doesn't like the idea of teaching somebody. You don't want to get any, nobody wants to take damage, you know, and that's his big thing, especially, you know, to the brain. So, I guess you could say I was exposed to it in that sense. And it was just something that always drew me. Like, I always wanted to be the toughest person around, you know what I mean? I always felt that way because I didn't want to be a victim, you know, 100%. I never wanted to be, and no means was I a bully, but I just did not want to be a victim in any means. I don't know why. It was just something that was big to me. You know, I saw, you know, in middle school, I think every kid sees, you know, bullying, especially more now than when I was around, because there's no, you know, there was no social media and things like that. But, you know, I saw my fair share of bullying. I'm like, that's not going to happen to me.
So even in elementary school, you were kind of cool, but then when you got thrown in with so many more people in middle school, then you're like, oh shoot, there's a thing going on here.
For sure. Yeah. I saw it, you know, and I can remember back to sixth grade. I remember seeing like my first real fist fight. I can remember the kid's name and everything. It was a kid named Brandon. He was from New York. This is how good my memory was. I was 12 years old, and I saw this kid. He got jumped, and he used to ride the bus with me to school. And he was a tough kid. You know, he was like a quiet, tough kid, you know, from New York. And it was the first time I was exposed to an actual like fist fight, you know, and you see things on TV and stuff like that. And I'm like, right there, I was like, man, I can't have that, you know? So that was, I can remember that. Like it was probably like maybe 3 weeks into middle school, you know, and he got jumped by a bunch of kids. And that was really where it started, you know, for sure.
Whether it was deserved or not, it definitely made an impact on you.
It opened my eyes. Yeah, I was like, man, I remember going home and I'm like, wow, man, you know, that was the first, you know, hand-to-hand combat, like live, that I had seen, you know, in a fist fight, you know. So I didn't want to be in that situation. I didn't want to be in a situation where I was going to get bullied, you know. I think going back to it, there was a kid named Excel Perez in, I can remember his name, in middle school, and he was real tough, and he was a boxer. He boxed at the same gym that I went to, and nobody wanted to mess with him. You know what I mean? Nobody wanted a problem with him, you know? So I wound up, as funny as it was, I wound up joining boxing. It was the same gym he was at, you know? So I guess that kind of, you know, brings that interest in it, you know? And then from there, just kind of grew to learn, you know. I always wanted to learn how to, you know, I treated boxing like it was my craft. I always wanted to learn the next thing, the next, you know, I wanted to learn at the highest level I could possibly learn at. You know, once you get past the silliness of like, I want to learn how to box so I can beat anybody up that tries to, you know, to mess with me. You know what I mean? So once you get past that, after a year or two, you start developing and realizing what, you know, boxing is really about if you're doing it the correct way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Interesting when you talk about that kid Excel. Was it such that people didn't want to mess with him because he demonstrated that you don't want to mess with him?
He just had a reputation, you know, and that's what it is in middle school. I found more is like, I knew everybody knew he boxed. He was, you know, a tough kid. You know, he had that that demeanor. And I think that's what boxing does for a lot of, you know, young kids. It did it for me, you know. Mm. Once you know that you can take care of yourself, you're not worried about it anymore. It gives you that confidence. And I think that's what it did for me. You know, for some weird reason, I didn't get into a lot of fights, you know, growing up, because it does that. It's like, okay, this kid actually, you know, he fights, he competes. He probably knows what he's doing. So let's, you know, let's not bother him. And it gives you that confidence, you know. And I think that was probably the most important lesson learned. And, you know, I try to teach that. When I first started coaching, I actually went back to the gym. I was 26 years old when I first started coaching, like hardcore and getting back into it. It was the Pines Pal that I came up from. So it was crazy, you know, walking in there and coaching at the same place that I was at when I was 13. But, you know, I try to demonstrate that to all the kids that I coach. You know what I mean? I feel like boxing has a bad name, to it, because there's certain coaches out there that are giving it that name. You know what I mean? They're not teaching these kids. The most important part about boxing is teaching a kid a craft, a skill, and educating them, you know. It's not just about teaching them, if that makes any sense. So, you know, I always educate my kids and the kids that I coach, like, hey, man, it's about being confident, not just with being able to take care of yourself with your hands, but also being able to meet your girlfriend's dad or family and things like that, you know, just being able to carry yourself, you know, you can hold your head up, you know what I mean, when you learn to box, and it gives you a whole nother confidence, if that makes any sense. Mm. So, and I think it's an important, you know, it's an important lesson, you know, to kind of learn out there.
Hmm. When you first set foot in that that Pines Pal gym, was there a period of transition for you, or like getting used to, oh yeah, I want to do this, but then, oh, this is what I'm asking for kind of thing?
You know, I went there with a friend of mine, and I tried to drag all my friends into boxing, you know, right from the get, when I was getting ready to sign up for the gym, because I didn't want to go by myself like anything else. You know, you're 13 going into a gym, and it was a friend of mine who lived down the street. He came with me. He lasted the day, you know, and it wasn't because we sparred or anything like that. It was just, you know, it was a lot of cardio. When I realized like how my first sparring session, I think, was, you know, for the first 3 months I boxed, it was more of just like learning the little fundamentals you could, how to throw a jab, how to stand, how to, you know, hold your elbows, keep your hands up, you know, footwork. Then it was like, all right, hey, do you want to spar? You know? Yeah. I mean, at that point, you know, you kind of learn where you're at. You get humbled in that sense. Never that I thought like I was going to go in there and blaze anybody or anything like that. But, I feel like even at a young age, I knew the reality of what I was doing. So it was, you know, that fear that kept me, you know, out of trouble in the sense of like my first sparring session, you know. So, you know, but I've been in there and I've fought and sparred with guys that were way above my level that, you know, put a beating on me. So there's always going to be, if you're in a good gym, there's always going to be that guy who's that much better than you. And it'll always keep you a little bit more humbled, you know. Otherwise, you're in the wrong gym. I like to say, if you're the toughest and the baddest guy in there, you know.
Hmm. So, what was that like for you, though? Like you said, I mean, it, you know, definitely it takes a little bit, year or two, to get from, okay, I'm learning techniques,
yeah,
to I want to be more educated, right? I want to learn more. But that's a long time, right? A year. 2 years?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, did it take that long for you to get to make that transition?
I'm still learning, as weird as it is. You know, even as a coach, you know, and a trainer, there's still things that I pick up on and I learn every day. If you're good at what you do, you're always trying to develop and learn new techniques, new ways, you know, good ways of, you know, to train certain people, because not everybody's different, you know, the mechanics and the way they work. So you're always trying to learn. I mean, if you're good at what you do, you're always trying to develop, you're always trying to find new techniques, you're studying your craft. So, I mean, I was always, when I got really into it, believe it or not, it was more of coaching, you know, that I was like really much more so into, you know, wanting to learn the sport inside and out. And as I got bigger and my growth came and people started following me and I started training fighters, and it was like, all right, well, I have somebody's safety in hand, you know, health in my hands, you know what I mean? So then it became that much more real for me in that sense. So That's when I really started to like obsess over it. I think when I really started to, it was probably about 25 years old when I first started coaching. Like, and I'm like, I'm going to do this. You know, then I started obsessing over it. I'd be on my phone watching Instagram videos, watching the live fight on the TV, you know, anything I could, you know, do to study that much more, you know, for sure. Mm-hmm. So as a kid, you're just, you know, you definitely want to be the better guy out there. And if you have good coaching, they're going to teach you how to, you know, to have a great IQ in the ring, how to be able to read guys, all those different things. You know, it takes time, though. That takes a lot of time, you know, and maturity. You know, most amateurs, what I see is, you know, when they start boxing, it depends on the age. There's always the talent kids, you know, they're super talented. But when they start to develop their IQ is when they hit about like 15, 16, depending on how many fights they've had, you know. Before that, they're just going out there and fighting. They're not, it becomes instinctual over time. They've sparred so much that, you know, but when you start to get a little bit older, 16, 15, 16, 17, you start to kind of realize like how to actually use your head in the ring. You know what I mean? How to use your mind and outthink a guy and outwork a guy, you know?
I mean, even when you hit those kind of, almost like defining, I won't say moments, but there's that period of like, you know, realization again for that transition from okay, focusing on the techniques and learning to like, okay, I want now there's a pull, more of a pull yeah. for you. What even back then, and I know, you know, I want to get into like what it's like now too, but even back then, what kept you in it? Because I mean, like you're, like you said, your friend didn't last a day. You lasted just, a little bit longer than that.
It was the competitive nature. Like I just like playing sports. Mm. You know, that was another thing. I think that's what kind of kept me in it. And I just wanted to be busy playing sports, doing something. You know, my dad always had a saying, I used to practice every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday in the beginning. And on Fridays, I didn't really want to go and train. Not because I was lazy or anything like that. I just want to hang out with my friends. It was Friday after school. My dad always used to say the same thing. When you come back, you know, practice went from, I think it was 6 to 9, we'd get home. And he would say the same thing. When you get home, all your friends will be outside doing the same thing. You know, so, and if I did something, he made sure anything I did, whether it was baseball, hockey, I did it for that year. There was no like stopping in between or, hey, I didn't want to do this. It was, hey, you're going to do this for the year. So, you know, he was supportive in what I did. Sometimes, and it's not his fault by any means, I wish that he was a little bit more, he pushed me a little bit more to like, you know, because there's times, you know, you start dating girls, you start, you know, hanging out with your friends, whatever it is, life, you know, once you hit, you know, that 16, 17 year old, you want to do your thing. And that's where the discipline comes in a little bit more, you know. And I just was so all around the, you know, hey, I want to do this sport and that sport and, you know, always bouncing around, just wanting to try new things, you know. Now I'm older, I wish that, but you know, he did what, you know, any father would do, like, all right, you want to play baseball? We'll do that. You want to do this? You want to do that? You know what I mean? Just as long as I'm not quitting anything. So for me, I always just liked sports. I always loved sports. It was one of those things. I, to be honest with you, I chalk up the fact that, like, I'm sure you've seen some of my mitt videos. The reason I'm so good at holding mitts is because I played baseball from the age of 4 to like 15 and I was a catcher. So I had great hand and eye coordination, you know? So I think that had a big to do with it, you know? So I just think that it's kind of discipline especially at a young age. It's, you have to have your parents and your family, they have to have a good foundation behind you, pushing you to keep going and, you know, good structure there, you know, with your family, like, hey, you know, this is what you got to do. You don't have a choice, you know, we're going, you know?
Well, you already had it in your mind that it was like a season for you. Okay, yeah. Well, it's baseball season. It's, you know, whatever. Oh, it's boxing season now.
So absolutely.
The thing that this part of it is, yep. There was no real, let me try it. It's just like, okay, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
100%. Okay. Yeah. It was kind of one of those things. And then, you know, life just takes a hold of you, you know, whether you're in a relationship with a girl, you know, when you're young. For me, I had like what I feel like a completely normal upbringing in childhood, you know what I mean? It's like, hey, I got a girlfriend, I'm gonna, you know, you're a young kid, you're like, this is what I'm doing, you know, or hey, my friends are doing this, I'm not, you know. My dad kind of let go of the wheel at probably about 16 in the sense of like, I'm not gonna force him to do anything he doesn't want to do, you know. But you know, at a young age it was like, hey, we're doing this, period, you know. But once you got to a certain point, it's like, hey, 16 years old, he's gonna, one day he might like playing baseball, the next day he might like, you know, tennis, you know. So that was kind of the way my dad was. He was he supported me with whatever it is that I decided to do, as long as I was doing something. You know, he wanted me to be active in anything, you know.
So you did that for a bit. You started, you know, moving around to different interests. But then it came back to you, early 20s.
Well, there was a period. Actually, I had cancer when I was 18 years old. So that kind of, yeah, that like threw everything off. Not necessarily like that just stopped boxing and stuff, but I hit you with a bomb there, huh?
Yeah.
So that kind of just put a hold on everything. You know, that stopped sports in general. I didn't do anything. And then, from about 18 to 20, and then I just completely stopped doing all those things. So
out of necessity though. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. But from there was, you know, when I picked it back up, like I said, it was just getting back into shape. You know what I mean? I didn't even think about fighting. Like it wasn't even on my mind in that sense. Like, for a long time, you know what I mean? For a long time, it wasn't something that was big. It became, like I said, when it started becoming as big as it is now was when I was about 24, 25 years old is when I started training in the gyms. And then I'm like, you know what, man, this is really what I want to coach. You know, I thought about it and it was like, this is something I really want to do. So
yeah, let's back up to that little bit of a speed bump there. 18 years old, you get a diagnosis of cancer.
Yeah, I had been diagnosed with leukemia.
Okay.
It's a blood cancer. Out of nowhere. So that was my senior year in high school. It was a speed bump for sure. And that kind of just changed the structure on a lot of things, you know what I mean, as far as wanted to be in any sports, you know what I mean?
Well, how did that come up for you? Because I mean, you said like if it was out of nowhere, what was the first clue? What was the thing that that got to that point?
I had a bruise on my arm from low platelets. And, you know, as an 18-year-old kid, I was always active. You know what I mean? I was always playing sports and, you know, and having a good time and roughhousing with your friends. So I didn't think anything of it, but it continued to grow. It got bigger. Finally, we went to the doctors and then, you know, they took my blood there, took a CBC. And they're like, hey, you know, we think that, you know, my cells were, you know, with leukemia, it blows up your white blood cells. So my white blood cells had expanded. And they're like, we think that he has leukemia. You have to bring him to the hospital. They rushed me over to Joe DiMaggio Hospital right here in Hollywood, Florida. And then from there, that was on a Friday. On Monday, they couldn't do any testing. They couldn't, you know, fully take, you know, bone marrow, you know, to find out what it is exactly. So on Monday they had done the testing and that night we knew that it was leukemia officially 100%. So that kind of derailed everything, you know what I mean, in general, from sports to boxing to life. So yeah. So that was 100% my focus there, you know.
No, absolutely. Yeah. So I mean, as especially around that time of life. I mean, that's when you see all your friends around you. They're getting ready to start their lives.
Yeah, senior year, man. They're, you know, prom, all those things that, you know. So, yeah, it was tough. That was tough. That was the biggest fight of my life, you know. So, yeah, that was a rough one, you know. Senior year, you know, I didn't go to prom. I didn't get to do all those things. I actually didn't graduate with my class. I came back because I made that decision, you know, I couldn't obviously graduate my senior year. So they were like, hey, listen, you could do homeschool and, you know, you won't be able to graduate with your class, but you'll get your degree. And I'm like, no, man, I wanted to come back and, I want to graduate and I wanted, you know, that normal life back. So I'm like, I'll come back. I'll go back to school and finish my senior year the right way when I get, you know, healthy, which I did. And then I wound up graduating.
So what was that like for you? Because I mean, when you heard that and like even your family, but more so you, a lot of folks, if they hear cancer, I mean, they're already thinking, oh shoot, 50-50 kind of a thing. But was that on your mind, or was it like, you were just like, was it really for you just a speed bump?
You know, when they told me that they think I had leukemia, I had no idea what the hell that was. I'm not even gonna lie. You know, my mom immediately knew what it was. I mean, she had said it right there, you know? So I was like, wow, this cancer, you know, it's one of those things. Ignorance is bliss in that sense at the beginning for the first, you know, 2 days. And I had already put it in my mind, because we had, like I said, I was hospitalized from Friday to Monday. You know, there was no going home. I was in the hospital, and I had already put it in my mind, you know, the worst. So I was like, all right, this is cancer. You know, because they're like, listen, it could be diabetes. It could be a lot of different things, you know. But I had already put it in my mind, you know, as weird as that is, you know, I think that may be the fighter mindset, like, hey, you know, come out expecting the worst, you know, prepare for the best, expect the worst, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, it was already in my mind. And then, when I knew it was, you know, official, I mean, yeah, it was just, in my mind, I'm like, I'm going to beat this thing. You know what I mean? And I think now, being, you know, I'm 32 years old now, it would be a whole different. You would be on that 50-50 mindset 100% as an adult, things like that. As a kid, you're just relentless, you know what I mean, with your mindset. And I think it was a healthy mindset that I had, that, you know, that was, I don't want to say that's what, you know, modern science also beat cancer, but, you know, that healthy mindset definitely got me through it. You know, that, hey, this is just, I'm sick. You know what I mean? And as bad as that fight was, you know what I mean? I was in there for a year, all kinds of, you know, the chemotherapy, all the worst stuff. I was like, this, I'm going to beat this, you know? I never ever thought once that I'm like, I can't beat this, you know?
Yeah.
And I had a great, you know, my family was amazing. You know, they were right behind me, supportive and stuff like that. My dad was, I think he was the one who kind of made that mind structure with everybody in my family, my mom, my dad, or my brothers, my sister, like, hey, you know, this is just going to be a speed bump, which it was, you know? And that, just like in the ring, you know what I mean? Everything's a fight. You just got to, you know, fight hard, essentially, you know? So, I mean, I chalk everything in my mind to fighting at this, especially at this point, whether it's work or, you know, relationships, whatever it is, I do the same thing, especially with a situation like that, you know? So, looking back at it, if I'm 32 years old and you tell me that, I'm going to think, just like you said, 50-50, you know, you kind of, especially being that I went through it once, you're like, oh my God, man, you know, but when you're young, you're so relentless. And it is that saying that ignorance is bliss. Like, you know, you hear about things when you're 18, like cancer and you know, and chemotherapy and radiation, but you don't know anything of what you're about to get hit with. You know what I mean? It was a bomb. So, yeah, it was crazy, but it was a speed bump in my life, you know, and it made me a better person, you know?
Wow, man. I'm still fucking blown away. That's so crazy.
Yeah, it was nuts.
Yeah.
It was a crazy time.
I bet. Well, I mean, what was it after they said, okay, you've gotten over this speed bump? Is it such that, is there fear of it coming back, or is there like, is there any chance of that, or?
At this point, no, I've been in remission for about 13 years. Yeah. So, I mean, anything's possible, like, you know, but they say once you hit, I think it's like 6 years, you know, the chances of coming back are, you know, slim to none. In the beginning, yeah, you go through, just like anything, you go through a little bit of post-traumatic stress. For a year, you're, you know, the way it would work was I'd go into the hospital, I'd be in the hospital for about 2-3 weeks in the hospital. I'd come out for about 5 or 6 days. So I'd be going through treatment. And then, you know, immediately I become what they call neutropenic, where you don't have any blood cells to fight any infections. So you can't go home, you know? So unfortunately I would have to sit there in the hospital for about 2 or 3 weeks. And then, you come home, I was at home for about like 6-7 days. And then you go back into, you know, to the hospital to go get treatment again. It was just that cycle for a year. So what happens is you get so accustomed to somebody essentially taking care of you, the nurses, the doctors, et cetera, that, you get post-traumatic when it's done. It's almost like when you tell like a soldier, hey, you're coming home. You know what I mean? It's like, well, what do I do now? You know? So, you know, there was always that transition of, you're just so happy to be alive and that it's over, but you're always thinking like, man, what happens if, especially that first year, you know, because it's most likely to come back in that first year. But yeah, you definitely go through that, you know, but you know, it grows you, you know, it's a learning experience, you know, and you think to yourself, I could withstand that, you know, anything it's a cakewalk from here, you know?
Well, let me ask you though, because I mean, it's one thing going through it. You get used to, as you say, kind of the rhythm of, it's like, you know, 3 minutes in, 1 minute out, 3 minutes kind of a thing, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
But then now that part is over, but there's still, I mean, even though the, you know, physically you're not going back to the hospital as often, you know, it's a kind of a different, you get out of that rhythm,
yeah.
Right? You're home now, you've got a few years out from that, okay, you know, I think, you know, we're good with the chemo, we're done with all of that, right? It looks like, you know, you can move forward now. But then there's still that, as you said, like in kind of that post-traumatic there's still that emotion that you carry
for sure.
So how did you deal with that, you know, for the next few years?
It was rough, man. I'm not going to sit here and lie, you know, because you go through, you know, certain things will happen. And you know, if I see a bruise on my arm or anything like that, you know, because that's how I had found out that I had cancer. You know, little things like that. You do go through that post-traumatic stress, you know. And I just think it, you know, to be honest with you, getting past all those things, it's time. You know, I'm a big believer in time heals everything. You know, you just have to, literally go through it. Unfortunately, you don't want to over-educate yourself, if that makes any sense. Like, you don't want to read too much about, in the sense of like, hey, what kind of treatments I had and what kind of thing it could, you know, post-life can be like with that. So it was more of, and especially when you're young, I was very, in the first year, I was really happy to just be alive. You know, everything was kind of a new experience. You know, the first year, as weird as it wasn't the first year. It was probably the second or third year, you know, you kind of go through it, because then it's like, all right, well, now what? You know, you know, the first year, you're just so ecstatic to be able to do certain things. Like, you know, I had no hair on my head. I would always wear a hat, no eyebrows. So, you know, you're embarrassed to kind of go out. So that first year, you're like, you know, you're back to normal. You know, you have your hair on your head. You look good. You know, you feel good. You know, so it's exciting for that. It's like a rebirth.
Right.
I think the second year, when everything kind of subsides a little bit. But, you know, for me, man, I'm a big believer in time healing everything. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're actively working towards it, of course, you know, like focusing on, hey, it's going to be a good day, whatever the situation may be.
Sure.
You know, it's going to be a good day. Everything's going to be fine. That's the past, you know, close the chapter, you know, move forward, you know. So
was that something that did you have people to help you through that, like to talk to? Did you go to counseling? We talk about that a lot, you know, particularly in fighting, right? Especially you're in the ring, you're one person in the ring.
For
sure.
You've
got a team with you as well, but ultimately you have to walk through there. I mean, but did you have a team that you could lean on a bit? I mean, just to carry a little bit of the burden with you?
You know, my family for sure. 100%. My family was there for me. They were very supportive. You know, but you know, like I said, it is one of those things. It's time. You know, I really truly believe, you know, my family, I could talk to them, but just like anything, unless you're there and you've done it, you can't understand it. Right. So, you know, my family was great. They would listen, you know, the doctors and, you know, to this day, you know, I still talk to some of them and I still see them and stuff like that. There was a time where, this kid Thomas that came into the hospital when I was probably midway through my treatment, I was probably at the lowest point. And he had spoke with me because he had gone through the same exact treatment the year before. So, yeah, I mean, those kind of things, definitely you draw some sort of, I guess you can say, you know, inspiration or, hey, everything, you know, confidence. But, you know, be looking back at it when you're so young, it's kind of like it's foreign to you. Any kind of post-traumatic stress, I didn't know what, you know, I would get anxiety about it. You know what I mean? I legitimately would get some sort of feeling of anxiety. I didn't even know what anxiety was. You know, when you're 22, 23 years old, you know, nobody tells you like, hey, this is an anxiety attack or whatever it was. So I just think it was, once I learned that, you know, that, hey man, I think people get so wrapped up that they're the only one going through something like that. You know what I mean? With anything. And really there's tons of people going through, you know, post-traumatic stress from all kinds of situations. So I think it now, looking back as an older individual, you know, I usually draw inspiration from people that have been in the same situations that are better now, you know, I think that's an important thing, you know, we're finding inspiration in any kind of situation, you know,
So whatever you could at the time that was like, okay, let me, you know, that would kind of get me through it. I'll get through it. But ultimately you were resolved in, I just got to get through. That's all.
100%. 100%.
You know, it is what it is, kind of a thing.
Absolutely. It's about having a healthy mindset. You know, it's funny. I had a guy that comes to my gym and he trains with me, Dustin Arnold. He just fought last Friday, and unfortunately he lost his fight, and it was unfortunate circumstances. That's the game of boxing. Sometimes, you know, he got caught with the right hand in the beginning of the fight, swelled up his eye. And, you know, it buzzed him. The shot was, you know, it was a hard right hand right in the beginning, broke his hand in the second round. You know, and he went on to fight, you know, that whole fight with a broken head, never said anything in the corner, never said a thing, you know, and went out, you know, and he got beat. And the whole time he stood on his feet, you know, he ended that fight on his feet, never hit the canvas, and he fought through. And you know what it was? On Monday, I was thinking to myself, and those are the kind of things, if you really look for inspiration, you can find it. Like, this guy, not to mention he's a single father, you know, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, this kid, he could have at any point said, hey, my hand is broken, I don't want to, you know, stop the fight, you know, or my eye is swollen, you know, he's cut, his eye's swollen. And on Monday, I was driving to work, and I was thinking about that. And that's the kind of thing I think is right in front of you, but people don't find inspiration. You know, and I think to myself, I'm like, man, like that inspired me. I'm like, you know, no matter what it is that you're going through, if you keep trucking away, you know, you're going to end that fight on your feet. You know what I mean? So I found extreme inspiration from that situation. I try to do that as much as I can, focusing on the little things like that, you know, that inspired me, man. That kid had an iron will, and it wasn't just about the fight. It was, I feel like any, you know, regular Joe can look at that and be like, man, that kid really went out like a real warrior, you know, like he ended that fight on his feet. He never quit. He never stopped. And that's life, you know, with whatever situation, whether you're sick or going through depression, anxiety, whatever it is that you're going through, you know, if you keep fighting, you keep, you know, that forward mindset, you'll get through it.
So I want to go into when you started getting back into the game after you found your feet again.
Yeah.
A little bit of a speed bump there. You decided to get back into the fight game, but in a different way this time, as opposed to kind of competing and taking or giving damage,
yeah,
bringing people up. What was that like, and what was that decision process for like for you? I mean,
as far as coaching goes,
well, yeah, just like you know, I feel like I want to get into coaching. Well, I mean, it something like you just woke up and like, yeah, I don't want to take the hits.
No, I'll really,
but
yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, I mean, it really just kind of, like I said, it kind of grew, like, you know, on its own, essentially. It was more of just, I knew I had a talent, was holding mitts, and I knew the game. It was just kind of, I wound up in the gym helping guys out. And then from there, I wound up training two guys, you know, that were MMA fighters and, you know, just helping them out. It wasn't like I was making any money off of it. It was, you know, helping them get ready for the fight. I loved to do it. And then, you know, when they started getting successful, more people came to me. And it just kind of grew in that way. And for a while it was like, you know, to make a good living off this, you know, you're not going to make a lot of money off fighters, man. It's just not going to happen. You'll make a little bit of money. If you're super successful, you know, yeah, you can make money. And I'm not saying, you know, that is something I would love to do, but, from there, I kind of transitioned into, at the time I was just coaching fighters, and I met a guy by the name of, Jeremiah, Mastershi, I believe his last name is, he's in New York. And me and him met, he came down here to do, an event, a boxing event. He's a trainer as well. And he kind of, you know, he schooled me a little bit on ways to make money, how to bridge the gap between coaching fighters and fitness individuals. And from there, it kind of just, that was like the connection right there for me, you know, where I was like, it all just kind of took off, you know, 'cause once I started coaching, I had a couple fighters. Started coaching individuals who just want to learn how to box. Then some of them who just want to learn how to box for the funness of learning started taking fights. It just grew, you know, from there. And, you know, as far as coaching goes, it was just, I always liked being a leader and a coach. You know, I always felt like I had that chip on, even as a kid, you know, as a young kid, I liked being a leader. So it made sense, you know, once I started doing it, and it just grew. I didn't expect it to happen. You know, it just did, you know, yeah. As crazy as it is.
Was there ever any thought in your head as far as like getting into it and like kind of just almost, I guess you weren't really starting from scratch, but I mean, it's a different, say label, but it's a different hat that you put on, right? From like helping people just in the
for
gym.
Sure.
To like, okay, now I'm a coach. Now I'm a trainer. Kind of hanging your shingle out like that. Was there any challenge for you in making that change at all? Like, am I really this guy, or am I qualified or anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, absolutely. You, I say you run into that. I would like to say I run into that situation once a month. You know, you always think that, especially now I'm kind of running and managing my own gym. You're like, man, you know, can I keep this going on? You know? Yeah, you know, I remember my first time I cornered somebody. I was extremely nervous. I was more nervous than I would be when I was. The thing is, you know, that person, if you train that person for that whole camp, that whole fight, you know, their safety is in your hands, in my opinion. I think that's the most important part, and that's the most stressful part of it. Mm. The fight is, you know, the fight is easy. You know, as long as they walk out of there, you know, healthy, you're all right. But that was always a big thing that I realized right from the start. I'm like, man, I'm a boxing coach. If somebody gets knocked out, it's, you know, that's on me. That's my responsibility, you know? So, yeah. And luckily I don't even want to say that cause I don't want to jinx myself, but I've been successful in that not happening yet, you know? But you know, yeah, you always think that, you know, sometimes I put the passion over certain things and, you know, as a coach, you know what I mean? You feel like this is the business. That's where I think I have the hardest transition is like, hey, I have a business. I own a business. Sometimes I put the passion of, hey, how I feel about the sport and the guys that are there over, you know, hey, paying the bills essentially, like, you know, so those are, I think, the biggest adjustments. I mean, I'm very confident in what I do. I mean, and that the only way to become confident is to do it, right? You know, you have to continue to be successful doing it. And the more you do it, the more you learn. I learn every time I'm in a fight camp. There's something I pick up on, something new, like, you know, that I would have done. Maybe I wouldn't have done that time or going to do in the future. So the more you do it, the more confidence you grow, you know, for sure. But, you know, I think like any fighter, they're always sitting in the back thinking like, did I do everything? Did I do all the necessary things before this fight goes down? You know, you think the same thing as a coach. I mean, especially if you put a lot into it, I always think that in the back. I'm like, all right, did my guy do everything? Did I do everything as a coach? You know? Yeah. I mean, personally, I maybe it's just a passion, but I always tell every one of my fighters, you see these mega gyms out there nowadays that have, you know, tons of fighters. You know, I coach about 10 guys on and off. And I say the same thing. If you lose, I don't have three or four other guys. That's like, oh, well, don't worry about it. Every guy is their own. If they lose, I lose, you know, and that's how I treat every fight. If that makes sense.
Mm. How do you get over that, man? Like, because like that, especially because you take it so seriously, right? It's not just, okay, we're going to run through the drills. We're going to get your fitness up and that type of thing. It's like to use your words, like their health, their safety, you feel is in your hands. Now, whether that's fair or not to say or to take on, that's a different question. It's the fact, you know, the fact is that you do, right? So it's easy for us, especially Instagram, and you know, you get these highlight reels from coaches and trainers and stuff. Oh yeah, this was our plan, blah 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 blah. Did this. It executed perfectly or whatever. Yeah. But then, you know, you living in the real world and understanding is like, oh my gosh, you know, this fighter's health is in my hands. I'm sure there are times when you're thinking, even, you know, as you mentioned, like, did I do everything? Am I doing everything? And there's that doubt. I don't think that ever necessarily goes away completely. How do you manage that, man?
I think you're absolutely right. If you're in love with what you do and it's a passion, you're always going to have. If you're a good coach and you care about your guy, if you truly do care about your guy inside out, I think, at least for me, I'm always going to feel that way. I don't care if my guy is unstoppable, you know, and you're always going to think that, or at least I do, you know. Maybe that's from the competitive standpoint, you know, because I've been there. The more you do it, the more confident you get, for sure. But there's always those nerves, you know, there's always. And it's healthy, fun nerves. I always say this, just like when you're competing, that healthy nerve is going to keep you sharp. It's going to keep you away from really getting hurt 9 times out of 10. It's the same thing as a coach. Those healthy nerves, when you're in a corner, it's just, you know, it's very fast paced, you know? So you just have to act instinctual, you know, what it is that you see. It's essentially, it's almost like you're fighting, if that makes sense, you know what I mean? From the outside, the only thing is the nerve wracking part is you can't do what, I can tell my guy the adjustments that he needs to make, but I can't do it for him, you know, and sometimes that's not going to work, you know? So, I think it's one of those things. The more you do it, the more comfortable you get with it. I try to leave no stone unturned when I'm training my guys, you know, for a fight. I'm not going to say every guy is perfect. There's certain guys that work way harder than others, you know? And that's in any gym with any fighter, you know? So it really comes down to just the work that you put in, You know, if you put in the work, you'll go out there feeling confident. No matter what, there's always the fear of anything. But I know, you know, I had this conversation with my buddy last night. I said, you know, I feel like I know when my guys are going to win their fights 9 times out of 10, you know, because the work they put in. I never go out there doubting any of my guys, but I have kind of a, you know, I'm a very playful guy. I don't take a lot of things serious, but when it comes to training, if you're training with me, I'm a no nonsense kind of guy, mm-hmm. you know, otherwise I just, you know, there's no point in training you. You know what I mean? If you're not taking it, if you're going to fight, I'm going to tell you what to do and you're going to do it. I'm the coach, you're the fighter. And I've had that situation, especially coming up, you know, at a young age where it's like, I've had a couple big names, you know, and I kind of let them run their camp and that there's no success in that. You know what I mean? It's just like a job, you know, you're employing me to do something. I'm going to do it. So, you know, it's that 100% I feel is the work is what gives you that confidence. Like, hey, I know that I did everything that I needed to do as a coach. He did everything he needed to do as a fighter. We're good. Mm-hmm. You know, and that worst situation, you lose that fight, you can hold your head up, know that, hey, I did everything I needed to do to win that fight.
You put in the time. I mean, kind of like what you're saying earlier as well. It's like, it's just, you know, it's you what you're saying, like time heals or time, uh-huh. you know, applies to whatever it is. It helps yep. out a lot.
Yep.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Let me ask you, as far as like, you know, you can hear the passion in your voice. Absolutely. You know, and the fact that, you know, you really take a lot of this seriously, but it's very different, as you'd already mentioned, between like that and the business side of things, particularly since now you have your own place and there's more at stake. You've got rent due and all that. I mean, what is that process like for you? What is that? How do you try to balance that out?
It's tough, man. I'm still learning. You know, to be honest with you, I'm still learning how to do that. I used to believe that if you love what you do, you're going to make a living in it. And it's true. Mm. But there's more to that. You know, I used to believe that. Like, hey, you know what? I'm going to train this guy for free. And it'll pay off dividends. And in the beginning, it definitely did. But now you get to a point where it's like, I got to pay the bills. You know, right. I have to. And the truth of the matter is if my business goes down, is that guy, if I can't pay the rent that month, is that guy going to give me the money to pay that rent? You know what I mean? So it definitely, it's hard, man. It's one of those things that you have to, it's hard for me to say no, you know, and that was something that, especially guys that I've come up with that I've trained for a long time, you know, and I don't have a big, you know, my numbers are fair, you know, what I charge is super fair, you know? So, you know, it's just that's my numbers. And, you know, I try not to cause an issue with it in that sense. Like, hey, if you can't afford it, I'll try to look out for you. I don't have that issue so much anymore where it's like, hey, this is, you know, your rent's due, man. You know, I don't have that real issue, but you know, it's hard when you know that somebody's going through it financially to, you know, to be like, hey man, you know, you got to pay your membership. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's the hard part.
Have you found that you have like a kind of a backup type position to go to now, or is it such that you still have to? I mean, it's hard when you like, it pulls on your heartstrings, man. You say, you talk about like, you know, For sure. Your friends, like, hey, there's a single dad, or you know, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not just how hard they hit you or how well they react to whatever you hold up.
There's
personal stuff there too.
Yeah, I mean, it 100% is. So it's hard to kind of hit a guy over the head for money. You know, it's one of those things, man, where, you know, I think that's why I have a second job, because it's like, you know, there's times where you know, I've kind of let that go. It's like, all right, well, you know, you can't pay it. I get it, man. Just like you said, you're a single father, or, you know, your bills, you know, everybody has, you know, bills to pay and everything else. I get it. But again, I've gotten to that point where I don't ask for too much. So, you know, it's one of those things like, hey man, you can't afford that. I don't know what to tell you, man. You're going to have to go somewhere else. I don't care how much I love you. Cause my numbers are, you know, my membership numbers are super fair. My pricing and everything else, you know,
you found your line. It's like, okay, this is
exactly. And that took time. That 100% took time, especially in the beginning. I was interning. So a lot of guys I trained was free, you know, it was just a passion and a love that I had and everything else. So now it's kind of like, hey man, you know, and Look, I say it all the time. Some people message me about, you know, training them, and I'll tell them my prices and they'll ask me for a discount. All the time. Yeah. And I literally, what I do is, you know, I just send them, I have, you know, pictures of other people's, you know, gym memberships, how much they charge for prices. I'll send them that and be like, man, I think my numbers are super fair. I said, you know, these guys are, you know, more than willing to train you. You know, this is a fair number, you know, and if you can't afford it, I get it, you know, but you know, I have a business to hold up, you know, and that's the tough part. When you open up a gym, it's not just about it. The love is still there and everything, but it's not just that, you know, you have to pay that, you know, you have to, you know, the lights, you know, the bills are due, man. You know,
Kevin Gleason, this was awesome, dude. Absolutely, I think it's going to be huge for people to find their way to it. If people want to get more of you, how could they do that?
Through Kevin Gleason, 7 at on Instagram. So they can find me through there, or kevingleason.co is my website. So, you know, you look me up, you know, Kevin Gleason, right on Instagram, you'll find me.
That's awesome, brother. Thanks so much for this, man.
I appreciate you having me on, man.
Folks, I hope you appreciated that conversation with Kevin. Like I said, I mean, he dropped a really big bomb on me. That was not something that I expected when he talked about his cancer and what he had to deal with through that. But, I mean, you can hear it in his voice and the things that he said, and that it really did make him better. And, you know, it's a great learning experience for him. I'm really walking away with a lot of great insights just even from that experience that he had, and I'm so grateful to him for sharing that part of his life with us. But that is it for today's episode. Again, this is Philip with the Everyday Fighter Podcast. We'll talk to you next time.